Welcome back. Last time, you may remember, the Yahwehlians were massacring a bunch of Israelites by sweeping this stroke-inducing death ray through a big crowd of them, when Aaron had perhaps his finest moment to date. He strode out into the killing fields, swinging his censer, you know, with the incense going, and somehow that brought the slaughter to an end. I think it's because, you know, they basically didn't want to kill off the high priest, you know, so they turned off the death ray. Of course, you know, he was just carrying out Moses' orders, so I don't know how much credit he deserves for it, but it still took a lot of nerve for him to follow Moses' orders in this case. Anyway, we're up to chapter 17 of the book of Numbers. And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Speak unto the children of Israel, and take of every one of them a rod, according to the house of their fathers, of all their princes, according to the house of their fathers, 12 rods. Write thou every man's name upon his rod. Now, if you'll take a look at the show art, which I've chosen for this episode, it's from a 19th century woodcut. You'll notice that the artist depicts these rods as being pretty skinny, not what you would expect for, you know, a walking stick or something. They're so skinny that Moses would have had to write real small to fit the names on the rods, not lengthwise, just, you know, the height of the letters. Of course, this is just an artist's depiction, but you know, he probably did some research before he went to all the trouble of doing that woodcut. So keep this image in mind as we move forward. And thou shalt write Aaron's name upon the rod of Levi, for one rod shall be for the head of the house of their fathers. So Aaron's rod is actually Levi's rod. You know, Aaron was from the house of Levi. He was descended from Levi. And this may mean that it's not the same rod that we've seen Aaron use before, you know, like back when he was in Egypt and appeared in the court of Pharaoh and threw the rod down on the floor or ground, whatever it was, and it turned into a snake, or appeared to turn into a snake. And thou shalt lay them up in the tabernacle of the congregation before the testimony, where I will meet with you. Now, before the testimony evidently means in front of the Ark of the Covenant, because, you know, the Ark is what contained the testimony. Traditionally, it's the, you know, the tablets for the Ten Commandments. And this mercy seat atop the Ark, which nobody seems to know what it looked like, is where Lord Yahweh appeared, you know, for at least some of his meetings with Moses. Sometimes he came and stood in the doorway. Could be a difference between whether it was a transmission or an actual physical appearance. And it shall come to pass that the man's rod whom I shall choose shall blossom, and I will make to cease from me the murmurings of the children of Israel, whereby they murmur against you. Speaking to Moses there, murmuring against Moses. Now, this would be a different kind of miracle than changing the rod into a snake. It would be based more in the biological and botanical than in the technological. And Moses spake unto the children of Israel, and every one of their princes gave him a rod apiece, for each prince one, according to their father's houses, even 12 rods, and the rod of Aaron was among their rods. And Moses laid up the rods before the Lord in the tabernacle of witness. And it came to pass that on the morrow Moses went into the tabernacle of witness, and behold, the rod of Aaron for the house of Levi was budded, and brought forth buds, and bloomed blossoms, and yielded almonds. Now, according to Jewish tradition, this rod, this particular rod, at one time belonged to Jethro, Moses' father-in-law, who planted it in his garden And it developed such an extensive root system that he couldn't get it back out again. Finally, Moses extracted it somehow, kind of like King Arthur pulling the sword from the stone. And he was rewarded with Zipporah's hand in marriage. But he, you know, apparently gifted the rod to his brother Aaron. Well, what kind of rod could have developed such a root system? Well, I have some experience in this. When I was a home brewer, I used to grow hops. Well, actually, I still grow hops because once they get started, you can't really get rid of them. And to get a hop plant started, you bury what is called a rhizome. Which is a piece of woody material that you might think is a root because it's something that grows underground, but it's really more of an underground branch than a root. And I think that that's what Aaron's rod was made from, a rhizome. Now, the King James translation implies that Aaron's rod was from an almond tree because it says it yielded almonds. But you know, I don't think that's true. Almonds don't grow from rhizomes. And the reason I don't think it's almonds is because the Hebrew word that's translated as almonds here in the King James Version means waking fruit. And that would apply to just about any kind of fruit that grew from an apparently dead piece of wood. So the wood woke up, in effect, and bore fruit. Waking fruit. So, what could do this? What grows from rhizomes besides hops? Well, ginger. Don't think it was that. Or turmeric. We're not really looking much in the spice world here. Bamboo. Wait. Look at that show art again. Don't those rods look like bamboo poles? If they were a little bit longer, they'd make good fishing poles. Now, I did a little research on bamboo and found out that it is one of the fastest growing plants in the world. And it does produce buds and blossoms and fruit at infrequent intervals, but regular intervals. And those regular intervals can range up to 120 years or so. Now, being an advanced race, the Yahwehlians would have had the botanical savvy to know when this was about to happen to Aaron's rod. And they would have the know-how, the technological know-how, to stimulate its growth, probably using some sort of irradiation technology that they put inside the Ark of the Covenant. Remember, verse 7 said that Moses laid up the rods before the Lord in the tabernacle of witness, which places them not only directly in front of the ark, but also probably on the dirt floor of the tabernacle. So they're in the wilderness still, you know. So the tabernacle just has a dirt floor. And this dirt floor was fertilized with plenty of organic material from all of the animal sacrifices. So if Aaron's rod was a bamboo rhizome, it would have been natural for it to bud out and bloom and bear fruit occasionally, but not probably within the lifetime of any of the Israelites back then, if it was, you know, one of the 120 or 130 year variety. And when this happened, of course, they would interpret it as a miracle. They wouldn't interpret it as a miracle if it did it every year.
Thank you.
And Moses brought out all the rods from before the Lord unto all the children of Israel. And they looked and took every man his rod. And the Lord said unto Moses, Bring Aaron's rod again before the testimony, to be kept for a token against the rebels. And thou shalt quite take away their murmurings from me, that they die not. And Moses did so, as the Lord commanded him, so did he. Now, in the next couple of verses, the rebels start freaking out because they're expecting a big sinkhole to open up and swallow them like it did Korah and his crew. Or they're expecting the death ray to start stroking them out. I don't know. And the children of Israel spake unto Moses, saying, Behold, we die, we perish, we all perish. Whosoever cometh anything near unto the tabernacle of the Lord shall die. Shall we be consumed with dying? But apparently they get spared this time. And that's the end of chapter 17. Now this next chapter, chapter 18, is pretty boring, so I'm just going to summarize it. Starts off talking about who bears the responsibility if something goes wrong in the tabernacle, whether it's the Levites in general or the priests in particular. It reiterates that there are some items in the tabernacle that only the priests can get close to, you know, like the Ark of the Covenant. And if anybody other than a priest gets close to it, they'll be struck dead or their faces will melt or something. Then it justifies the Levites getting to keep 90% of the offerings of the other Israelites by pointing out that they don't have property rights like the other Israelites. They can't inherit any property. So they get supported, you know, on the public dime, and they eat high on the hog, so to speak. Actually, not on the hog, but on the sheep, the ram, and the bullock. And their tithe is a tenth of all the tithes that they collect. So that's why they only get to keep 90%. And I guess that's about it for chapter 18. So let's move on to chapter 19. And the Lord spake unto Moses and unto Aaron, saying, This is the ordinance of the law which the Lord hath commanded, saying, Speak unto the children of Israel, that they bring thee a red heifer without spot, wherein is no blemish, and upon which never came yoke. Never did a lick of work, in other words. And a heifer is a young cow that's never had a calf. So basically this Hereford heifer has lived a life of ease so far. But the Yahwehans are going to put an end to that. They can't stand for anything to live comfortably, apparently. And ye shall give her unto Eleazar the priest, that he may bring her forth without the camp, and one shall slay her before his face. Now, it seems to me that Eleazar is kind of being groomed to take over the high priesthood. Apparently he's Aaron's eldest surviving son. Now, I think that's why he's mentioned specifically by name here, rather than just saying to give the heifer to one of the priests. And Eleazar the priest shall take of her blood with his finger and sprinkle of her blood directly before the tabernacle of the congregation 7 times. And one shall burn the heifer in his sight. Her skin and her flesh and her blood with her dung shall he burn. And the priest shall take cedar wood and hyssop and scarlet and cast it into the midst of the burning of the heifer. Then the priest shall wash his clothes and he shall bathe his flesh in water. And afterward he shall come into the camp and the priest shall be unclean until the even. Yeah, I would think so. And he that burneth her shall wash his clothes in water and bathe his flesh in water and shall be unclean until the even. And a man that is clean shall gather up the ashes of the heifer and lay them up without the camp in a clean place, and it shall be kept for the congregation of the children of Israel for a water of separation. It is a purification for sin. So evidently they mixed these ashes with water, and then, they saved this mixture and sprinkled unclean people with it to restore their purity. In effect, they baptized them. And he that gathereth the ashes of the heifer shall wash his clothes and be unclean until the even. And it shall be unto the children of Israel and unto the stranger that sojourneth among them for a statute forever. He that toucheth the dead body of any man shall be unclean 7 days. He shall purify himself with it on the third day, and on the seventh day he shall be clean. But if he purify not himself the third day, then the seventh day he shall not be clean. Now, when it says he shall purify himself with it, he's talking about with this mixture of ashes and water. Whosoever toucheth the dead body of any man that is dead, and purifieth not himself, defileth the tabernacle of the Lord. And that soul shall be cut off from Israel, because the water of separation was not sprinkled upon him. He shall be unclean. His uncleanness is yet upon him. This is the law. When a man dieth in a tent, all that come into the tent and all that is in the tent shall be unclean 7 days. And every open vessel which hath no covering bound upon it is unclean. Now, this sounds like they knew that there were invisible microorganisms that might get into containers without lids or without tightly fitting lids. The Israelites wouldn't know that, but the Yahwehlians would have, being an advanced race. And this is the Yahwehlians' instructions to Moses and Aaron. So they can occasionally be helpful. And whosoever toucheth one that is slain with a sword in the open fields, or a dead body, or a bone of a man, or a grave, shall be unclean 7 days. And for an unclean person they shall take of the ashes of the burnt heifer of purification for sin, and running water shall be put thereto in a vessel. And a clean person shall take hyssop and dip it in the water, and sprinkle it upon the tent, and upon all the vessels, and upon the persons that were there, and upon him that touched a bone, or one slain, or one dead, or a grave. And the clean person shall sprinkle upon the unclean on the third day and on the seventh day. And on the seventh day he shall purify himself, and wash his clothes, and bathe himself in water, and shall be clean at even. But the man that shall be unclean and shall not purify himself, that soul shall be cut off from among the congregation, because he hath defiled the sanctuary of the Lord. The water of separation hath not been sprinkled upon him. He is unclean. And it shall be a perpetual statute unto them that he that sprinkleth the water of separation shall wash his clothes, and he that toucheth the water of separation shall be unclean until even. And whatsoever the unclean person toucheth shall be unclean, and the soul that toucheth it shall be unclean until even. And that's the end of chapter 19. Chapter 20. Then came the children of Israel, even the whole congregation, into the desert of Zin in the first month. And the people abode in Kadesh, and Miriam died there and was buried there. And there was no water for the congregation, and they gathered themselves together against Moses and against Aaron, as usual. And the people chode with Moses and spake, saying, Would God that we had died when our brethren died before the Lord. They always say that. Or something close to that. And why have you brought up the congregation of the Lord into this wilderness, that we and our cattle should die there? Yeah, I always say that too. And wherefore have you made us to come up out of Egypt, to bring us in unto this evil place? It is no place of seed, or figs, or vine, or of pomegranates, neither is there any water to drink. Well, no, because it's not the promised land yet. And Moses and Aaron went from the presence of the assembly unto the door of the tabernacle of the congregation. And they fell upon their faces, and the glory of the Lord appeared unto them. So this is another occasion when he shows up in the doorway, I guess. And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Take the rod, and gather thou the assembly together, thou and Aaron thy brother, and speak ye unto the rock before their eyes, and it shall give forth his water, and thou shalt bring forth to them water out of the rock, so thou shalt give the congregation and their beasts drink. And Moses took the rod from before the Lord as he commanded him. Now, is this Moses' rod or Aaron's rod? And if it's Aaron's rod, which one is it? The one that appeared to turn into a snake or the one that blossomed overnight? It isn't clear yet. And Moses and Aaron gathered the congregation together before the rock, and he said unto them, Hear now, ye rebels, must we fetch you water out of this rock? In other words, am I going to have to prove it to you? And Moses lifted up his hand, and with his rod he smote the rock twice, and the water came out abundantly, and the congregation drank, and their beasts also. So I'm thinking that this was Moses' rod, the one that he had previously used to get water out of a rock in this same way, back in Exodus 17. And the Lord spake unto Moses and Aaron, Because ye believed me not to sanctify me in the eyes of the children of Israel, therefore ye shall not bring this congregation into the land which I have given them. Now he's pissed. See, Moses and Aaron both did something wrong here, apparently. And as a result, neither one is going to get to enter the promised land. Well, what exactly did they do that was wrong? Well, back in verse 8, Moses was instructed to take the rod, but only to speak to the rock, and it would bring forth water. But that's not what he did. He didn't speak to the rock at all, or if he did, it isn't reported here. Instead, he struck the rock with his rod. And not just once, but twice. And apparently the reason that he struck the rock was that he didn't believe that just speaking to the rock would be enough to bring water forth. So he reverted back to what had worked once before. He struck the rock with the rod. And when it didn't immediately start gushing, I guess, he hit it again. So it was his lack of faith in his instructions and his refusal to follow instructions that got him denied entry into the promised land. And I guess since, as usual, Aaron just went along with whatever Moses said or whatever whatever anybody that he was happened to be with said, he didn't get to go in either. This is the water of Meribah, because the children of Israel strove with the Lord, and he was sanctified in them. And Moses sent messengers from Kadesh unto the king of Edom. Thus saith thy brother Israel, Thou knowest all the travail that hath befallen us, how our fathers went down into Egypt, and we have dwelt in Egypt a long time, And the Egyptians vexed us and our fathers. And when we cried unto the Lord, he heard our voice and sent an angel and hath brought us forth out of Egypt. And behold, we are in Kadesh, a city in the uttermost of thy border. Let us pass, I pray thee, through thy country. We will not pass through the fields or through the vineyards, neither will we drink of the water of the wells. We will go by the king's highway. We will not turn to the right hand nor to the left until we have passed thy borders. And Edom said unto him, thou shalt not pass by me, lest I come out against thee with the sword. Now Edom was populated by the Edomites, who were descended from Esau, the hairy older brother whose birthright Jacob basically stole. And of course, Jacob was later renamed Israel, which would explain why the Edomites, the children of Esau, might still hold a grudge against the children of Israel. And the children of Israel said unto him, we will go by the highway, and if I and my cattle drink of thy water, then I will pay for it. I will only, without doing anything else, go through on my feet. And he said, thou shalt not go through. And Edom came out against him with much people and with a strong hand. Thus Edom refused to give Israel passage through his border. Wherefore Israel turned away from him. And the children of Israel, even the whole congregation, journeyed from Kadesh and came unto Mount Hor. And the Lord spake unto Moses and Aaron in Mount Hor by the coast of the land of Edom, saying, Aaron shall be gathered unto his people, for he shall not enter into the land which I have given unto the children of Israel, because he rebelled against my word at the water of Meribah. Take Aaron and Eleazar his son, and bring them up unto Mount Hor, and strip Aaron of his garments, and put them upon Eleazar his son, and Aaron shall be gathered unto his people, and shall die there. And Moses did as the Lord commanded, and they went up into Mount Hor in the sight of all the congregation. And Moses stripped Aaron of his garments, and put them upon Eleazar his son, and Aaron died there, in the top of the mount. And Moses and Eleazar came down from the mount. So, passing of the torch. The high priest is dead. Long live the high priest. And when all the congregation saw that Aaron was dead, they mourned for Aaron 30 days, even all the house of Israel. Well, that's the end of chapter 20. And we are running out of time again. So we'll pick it up next time at the beginning of chapter 21. Until then, keep the faith, follow all instructions to the letter, and may your rod grow and blossom and be fruitful.